Council to order at 6:31. Does any member of Council have a change? 5:31, I'm sorry. Does any member of Council have any changes to tonight's agenda or staff? Hearing. Can you speak in that, please?
I'm not sure whether it was who last time, but the amended budget sheet that we sent out before the last scheduled meeting.
What about it? It
should have been added.
Okay. I think it was in the packet. Miss, anything else? Okay, so we move on to a discussion and possible vote on a process to be used in filling the Ward 1 council vacancy. This is the first time I've ever been involved in this. Mr. Glickert was here last time this occurred, but as we all know, Steve Kraft resigned his seat on May 27th. As per Section 10 of the City Charter, this council has until July 27th to fill the vacancy, or an election to fill the seat shall be held. The charter reads, vacancies in the council, including that of mayor, shall be filled within 60 days by the council. Said appointment shall run to the next April election, at which time a successor shall be elected for the unexpired term. In the event the council is unable to agree within 60 days, then a special election shall be held to fill the vacancy until the next regular municipal election. Previous vacancies on the council have been filled in various ways. I did provide you with all the minutes from the meetings that we could find. However, as Council Member Pro pointed out after Mr. Kraft resigned, a previous council came up with a process that might work for us, at least be a starting point for the discussion. This was when former Council Member Francine Brungardt stepped down and Mike Glickert was on the council at that time. At that time, applications from interested parties were accepted. However, there is a discrepancy in the memory of council members from the time. Mr. Glickert thought that anyone could apply for the opening. Former council member Stephanie Brote thought that each member of council nominated someone for consideration. We found no clarity on the issue in the minutes. We do know, however, there were six applicants. It was agreed by the full council that a successful applicant would need four votes to be appointed. The applications were accepted or interest was expressed by the applicants. We have not found a formal application form. Each council member then voted for one candidate they would like to consider. They voted on a private written ballot that was handed to the mayor. Per Ms. Pum, the mayor then counted the ballots and announced the results. The two who received the most votes then moved on to the next round. The council then voted on the final two, each member casting one vote. The voting continued until one candidate had four votes. In one of the meetings on the 14th of August, Wayne Munkel, who was one of those six applicants, was nominated by Council Member Sharp at that council meeting where the process was discussed. Mr. Munkel was not approved. Applicants spoke before the council prior to the voting. We can't find any record of their comments. I do know it happened because I was in the audience at that time. And I'm just read this to get your thoughts on this process or how you think we should go forward. If we decide we want to move forward in something similar, I prepared a sample application form for us to consider based on our board and commission application if we decide to proceed in this direction. As I said to Mr. Smotherson when we talked a couple of weeks ago, my only concern about the prior format from what we could get from the minutes was they mentioned an application, but we could find no record. So I don't know if people wrote their own letters or if there was a formal phone. So with that, I'd like to open up discussion. Mr. Glickert.
As I recall, we gave each applicant 5 minutes to speak. I'm willing to give more as we move forward with this, 10 minutes. They spoke in front of council and to the chamber and essentially gave us an overview of what we are looking for in the application that you sent out. Tell us why, where, what, et cetera. And I want to back up for a second. Can you give us the date at which 60 days started?
As I read the charter and as I understand, after asking Mr. Walker, it started the day Mr. Kraft resigned, which was effective May 27th.
Thank you.
Mr. Crow.
I'm actually, for the most part, in agreement with the mayor's process, sort of following the outline of Ms. Brungardt's. The only question I really have is that in the packet you gave us, for some reason you did not give us the minutes of June 12th, 2006, I don't think, or if you did, they don't say. It clearly says the announcements will read Ward 2 Council Member open seat. Applications to run for Council Member Ward 2 are available from the city clerk. Please contact her at 505-8605. So, Tim, there had
well.
Well, this was the entire, this entire meeting was devoted to the vacancy that occurred, and the entire meeting's minutes not only list the suggestions from all the council members, it also then says again that the application is available in the city clerk's office. So if the city clerk is a maintainer of our records and it says here that she had them, I'm at a loss as to why we can't come up with an application. But having said that, if you go back through what the council members suggested that we have on the application, they literally parallel the notes that I put, and I think you just mentioned, and that is that between the requirements that we have for a person to run for council and our commission application, we likely have enough information for people to fill out what they were, the information that we would have to at least start the process. And I will say, as from the first ward, I'd be happy to have as many people apply as they'd like to.
Ms. Pump, could I ask you to search for the minutes, because you helped me in that search, and share them with all members of council? Mr. Smotherson?
One of the things that I think I spoke when I spoke to you about is that I thought that this could be a quick process. And the reason why I said that, in respect to Mr. Crow and the fact that, you know, he's willing to have an open forum and have people apply, I think with the nature of this council and the history and for the past couple of years, I really don't see that we would be able to actually choose a qualified candidate. Or I think that there would be some suspicion in choosing a qualified candidate. My question is, how do we get to setting up a special election? And that's what my question is, because I really don't believe, after with the history of this council, with the atmosphere of the city, and that it's something that we should do. I think that what should actually happen is that we jump to a special election and let the first ward choose their candidate.
Mr. Glickert?
I have to disagree with Mr. Smotherson. I thought Lynn Ritchie was a very, very good second ward member. Number two, I'd really like to see us follow the charter. If it doesn't work, then we can have an election.
Ms. Carr?
Thank you. Well, actually, I do agree with Mr. Smotherson. As I try to imagine how this process has worked, I can't see us finding a candidate that would span our split. And further, I think that whomever we would propose would be suspect to a large number of people, wouldn't matter who it was. So with respect for the people in the first ward, I would suggest that we do go to a special election. And with that in mind, I know that the mayor had said that the cost would be between $35,000 and $60,000. So I called the Democratic director, Eric Fay, and had a conversation with him about the cost of special elections. And I'd like to make sure that everyone gets a copy of this. I'll just pass these around. So essentially, it is, if we hold an election just for Ward 1 with roughly 8,000 voters, the cost, he said, was between $1.50 and $2.50 per registered voter. And that comes out to be between $12,000 and $20,000, not $35,000 to $60,000. If we were to hold an election, for instance, for a bond issue, that would be citywide, we would be paying that anyway, and Mr. Fay corroborated that we would not pay anything additional for a special election. And further, he mentioned that depending on our charter, and this is one of the questions that I would have liked to have had the city attorney here for, at least to give her a chance to interact with us, which I think is very important, not just to receive written communications that I then have to go back and back and back again until I get to the meat of it. He suggested that we contact our city attorney and ask, because it appears that as a charter city, we have the right to set the date, that we don't necessarily have to have the August or November date. And that would actually require some weighing in, specifically what he said. I strongly recommend you confirm this with your city attorney. So that basically covers the cost, considering all the money that we have wasted. I think it is a good investment. I certainly won't preclude people from applying or going through that process. I just can't envision it producing satisfactory end results for Ward 1 and, in fact, for the city. And whether or not Ms. Ritchie was a good council member is irrelevant. We're dealing with the time right now and a process that does have a precedent, and I think we can look back to it, but we're a very different council than the council in 2006.
I would just like to say when the city clerk contacted Mr. Fay, he had quoted us the number I gave you. He was basing it on all the registered voters. He may have clarified that with you, but he was basing the cost he quoted to the city clerk on all registered voters in University City. And it is true that if it's on, depending on what we do on a bond issue, if there's a bond issue on in November, it would not cost any extra. But I agree with Mr. Glickert and Mr. Crow. I think it would be wrong of us not to try to come to an agreement. If, as Mr. Glickert says, that's what the charter says, and if we don't agree, don't have an agreement by the end of the 60 days, then it would go to an election. That's what the charter says, and I think the charter is designed to encourage the council to try to come into an agreement on people they could work with. Any other question? Mr. Crow?
So as you see this going forward, if we were to reach an agreement to accept applications, which I'm sure whatever, if you can share that with us, I think that's fine. Is part of the agenda of this meeting going to be how those votes are then tallied, or is that a secondary step?
Based on the board and commission application with a few extra questions in there, this was just a starting point for everyone to look at. My thought was we would decide if we're going to move forward. I have a suggested time frame, and if we decide to do this suggested time frame, that we set up a time with this council to talk about how we would vote upon any applications. What I have here for my notes is if we decide on this process and the application is edited by you all and approved, I would suggest that we ask that the completed applications be returned no later than July 8th, that the council be presented with those applications on July 11th, that we hold a special meeting of the council on July 18th to hear from whomever wants to apply, and then we could either vote on the 18th or decide to hold another meeting on the 25th, which would have been our regularly scheduled meeting date. And if we don't have a candidate by the 25th, then it would go to an election. And if you would see on this sample I sent to you, I just changed a bit from the board and commission. I just asked how long they've lived in Ward 1. Although according to the charter, you have to be a resident of the city for 3 years, but not of your ward.
Right.
Are you a registered voter? I put the fines fees because our charter still says that. However, by state law, we do not check that anymore. If a candidate wants to contest that, it's up to the candidate to contest. You may or may not want to know that. And then I just gave them sometimes why you would want to be appointed and what you think you would bring to the council. The other questions are from the board and commission application.
A couple of things for so many folks who say that we don't always agree. I will frighten everyone by saying that my notes have that I think it'd be good for us to have the applications out and back by July the 8th. And that we'd meet the week of July the 11th, and then I didn't really go to the next day. So I'm really not – I think the process actually could work. I think the only thing is I think the application would need to be changed on the residency because I think it is U-City residency, not Ward 1. And then I do think we have an – I think we have the right to ask if all their taxes have been paid. And, again, by the way, as I work through this process, I'll politely disagree with my colleagues, and I really do think we have an obligation to give this a shot. I'm not saying that I hold out a great deal of surprise as far as whether we are successful or not, but I also understand your comments where the citizens of the first ward deserve a right to vote, and I think they are going to get that right to vote. Either in a special election or come next April. But the thought of us having a variety of contested votes for the next few months is not something that I would look forward to. And I would ask that we give this a shot with the changes I've made to the mayor's application. And the timeline actually looks fair to me. I can't believe that we would get it all done, though, on July the 11th. I think if history repeats itself, the last time it was two or three meetings. And frankly, I think if I were reading between the lines, I think the reason you had a lot of minutes that weren't necessarily taken is that I think minutes weren't necessarily taken, and I think there were probably a lot of conversations that were occurring outside of the meeting, at least if you're the cynic in me would say that's what this looks like. So I actually would like us to try, and I am perfectly comfortable if my colleagues are not in support of this, but I would think that we ought to give this thing a shot.
Mr. Crow, can I ask, did you say you think we can or ask about fines and fees? You're okay with that?
Mine was fines, fees, and or unpaid taxes.
Okay. Mr. Jennings.
I concur. I think we ought to give this process a chance as it's been done in the past. I don't want us to spend money we don't have to spend, but if we fail to select another person to take Dr. Kraft's seat, then we should go to a special election. But I'd like to see this done the same way it's been done in the past.
Mr. Smotherson.
Could you go through the dates again for me is one question, and then my second question is, at this meeting, are we going to learn how that special election is going to be put together in case that happens?
Not at this meeting.
Not at this meeting.
Not at this meeting. But
okay. July 8th was?
July 8th was, I was suggesting, and apparently Mr. Crow was too, that we decide, make any changes to this sample and start getting it out, publicizing it, making known that it's available. Have those returned no later than July 8th, which is a week from this coming Friday. Present the applications to all of you. They would go to the city clerk, and you would receive them on July 11th, which is our regularly scheduled meeting. I was suggesting we hold a special meeting of the council on July 18th just to hear from whomever applies. I mean, we don't know if we'll get 6 or 20 or whatever. And then either vote that night or decide to hold another meeting on the 25th, which would have been our regularly scheduled council meeting. Mr. Smotherson, you've not been here, but we have in the past taken out the second July and August council meetings and rescheduled if needed. That's what I was suggesting. Did you have something, Mr. Jennings? Okay. Mr. Clickard?
I guess it would be to the city clerk. Have you given thought as to how you're going to advertise these applications? Obviously, the website of University City is one, but have you given any thought to other ways of getting the word out, so to speak?
The newsletters.
Are you going to alert the press?
Yeah, you would do it. You could do a news release saying that the council is accepting applications and how to proceed. If Mr. Walker agrees, we could put it up on the information boards that are located in Ward 1, in or near Ward 1. Our newsletters, the Facebook pages, and we also have a Twitter account, I think, with the city.
Ms. Carr?
Well, speaking of newsletters, it appears that former council members Brote and Wagner did use their newsletter to alert the their constituents, even though it was a Ward 2 election. So that's not an inconceivable way to do it. It's not as broad a net as I would like to cast, but then I think we certainly can do that.
And I'm glad to do it in mine, which goes citywide, and Mr. Crow has his that goes many places. I think we all can. It can go on next door. I think we can get the word out. So could I say, because I know Mr. Smotherson was hoping for some discussion on budget items tonight, could I ask if there's a consensus of moving forward as we spoke tonight, doing slight edits to this, formalizing it, and starting to get out the word, and following at least through July 11th, the time frame that we have set up here. Ms. Carr?
I would like actually to take a vote since you had noticed this meeting as a possible vote, because this is pretty important and we should go that route.
That's fine. Ms. Pum, would you please, Mr. Crow?
Yeah, following back with the comments made, I think it's important for us to sort of take heed of those who came before us. And it seemed to be a concern of several council members the last time around that there could be no meeting unless everybody was there. And I guess what I would say is there's a part of me that says I understand the logic of that. The second part of it is there has to be an element of trust, and I recognize that this council does not necessarily have that level of trust, but I am comfortable if one of us can't be there that there be discussions about candidates, but that no vote be taken. Because I think for all of us during the summer months, if somebody's not there for the discussion, I think that's one thing, or the interviews, because you're going to get the information from either by paper or by the interview. But I think the understanding that I would want that is at least a little bit more liberal than the last time around is that I'm at least comfortable if there are meetings that occur either to discuss or to interview the candidates. But if one of us can't make it, we have half the time that the last council had to do this. We have half the time. So to me, one person not being able to do it sort of throws a wrench in the whole thing. I do believe, under these circumstances, that all six of us need to be there for the vote. But for the discussion purposes, as long as we can find a semblance of trusting each other that a vote not be taken, then I'm comfortable if that can be made a part of the process.
I'm fine with that.
I then would like to make a motion, again, so that that be a part of the record, that I move that if all of us are not there, no votes will be taken.
Second.
All those in favor? This is votes on the applicants.
Right. Votes
all
on
those
the
in
applicants.
Favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? The ayes have it. Thank you very much. So, Ms. Crow, can you pull Ms. Pum, could you pull the council on following the process set forth tonight based on the process used in 2006, making edits to the sample ballot that you have on hand. And I'll give you the electronic copy tomorrow. If you can pull the council.
Councilmember Smotherson.
Nay.
Nay. Councilmember Jennings. Councilmember Carr?
Nay.
Councilmember Crow?
Aye.
Councilmember Glickard?
Aye.
Mayor Welsh?
Aye. Thank you very much. Thank you all. Now we move on to other discussion of business. Mr. Smotherson, you had said you might want to bring some other stuff up about the budget at this meeting. I'm not sure if you still want to, but anybody can. We have about 30 minutes.
Well, one point that I just wanted to clarify, and it's really a simple question, and I do apologize, I didn't have time to address this. What I'm actually looking at is the police facility, $1,260,000. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Page number M31. If that helps. And I'm probably going to be doing a little jumping around, but What I wanted to simply ask the question is, we've got three proposals for bonds, meaning three amounts in 7.7, you know, the various amounts that we have. And they also, we have the certificate of participation. And what I'm actually trying to understand is we've allotted $7 million that we've set aside for the building of the new police station. But what I'm really actually trying to understand is that if the proposed amount for the police station was $12 million, then why is it the budget, the minimum budget amount, I mean minimum bond amount and certificate of participation amount is 7.7 or whatever the exact figure is? Because then why, I'm trying to find out if it should be $5 million, because why do we need the extra 2 or 2.2 or whatever that's allotted for that? And because what it seems to me is that we've allotted for the police facility in the bond issue already. And so, and now we're having a deficit, which includes, and I know this says this is a one-time spending, and that's actually a two-year process, correct? To rent those or to rent the modules. But my question is, it seems like we've already allotted that in a certificate of participation and also in the bond. And so I'm just trying to understand and make sure that we're not doubling this amount in reference to those figures.
We are not, but I'm going to ask the finance director to give some specifics on that. My throat is bothering me. Tina?
Councilmember Smartisan, that amount is not duplicated.
It's not, okay.
No, sir.
Okay, because what what I've understood is that when it first came out, when we first made the proposals in reference to the bond issues, it seemed to me that that we were including, and again, I could be wrong, and I'm in misunderstanding because I wasn't really part of the council when we really first started doing this process. But what I understood was that 2.2 or 2.3 million was part of the amount that we were asking for in the participation certificate of participation and the bond issue, and I thought that that's what we were asking for, and we had included that, and it could be my misunderstanding. Because now, all of a sudden, we're separating this amount for police facilities, and it seems like it's a duplication or a doubling of that amount. And that's what I'm not trying to understand.
These 1.26,
right.
That's only for the temporary building,
right.
And for 1 year. For both bond issue for both general obligation and COPS, certificate of participations, mm-hmm. only cover the new building.
So that's going to
rebuild the new building. Yes,
right.
Sir.
So again, we have $7 million set aside, and
correct.
We have, and then the bond issue, that amount is another $7 million, and the certificate of participation is another $7 million, correct? So I thought that gives us, that's a $14 million balance. So what's the extra $2 million for if the estimate for building the police station was 12, if that's right? Now, I'm just asking to clarify.
We start for the general obligation bonds. Those are for the new building.
Right.
And either general obligation or certificate of participations, not both. Correct. Then these 1.2, this is only 1 year for rent the temporary building, just for 1 year.
But it's 2 years that we're renting.
Right. So next year, we're going to have to add, you know, pretty much the same amount to the next year budget.
Mr. Smotherson, are you asking why the GO and the COPS are not 5.5 instead of 7.7? Since we've set aside $5 million, if we're estimating the total cost of the new facility is 12.5, why isn't the GO bond number and the COPS number 5.5? Because 7 plus 5.5 would be 12.5. Are there other costs that are included
to make it. She's talking about three scenarios. The lowest one is $7.7 million.
Correct.
Can you explain what these scenarios are? Were these scenarios, can you explain what the scenarios for the general obligation bonds are and why one of those scenarios isn't $5.5 million?
For the general obligations, we hope that if it's passed, it'll be the new revenue sources for the city. So we can have 15 or 12 million to be enough for the new building and possible to use portion of it to maintain the existing building. As far as the certificate of participations, the reason that that's only 7.7 because that has to be paid from general fund, and that it just how much the general fund can repay the loans, the bonds. Yeah.
If we don't need, if the bond issue doesn't pass, if we decide on a bond issue and it doesn't pass, everything would be done by COPS, right? And if we don't need all of the money that is authorized, we would not take the money, right?
Right.
So if the cost after a building is designed, if the cost goes down, they're estimating 12.5, but you might be able to get the cost down to say 9.5 or 10. So we would be given the authority for up to 7.7 million in COPS, but maybe not use all of that.
So you could actually make a change in that request in the bond issue, meaning make it 5.5 and. I mean, could we do that?
Is City Council can approve, but we don't need to sell them all. Yeah. We can sell the bonds as what we need.
The short answer is yes, in answer to your question.
And then am I correct that if a bond issue is agreed upon and we agree upon an amount, and if we went for a higher amount and it was approved, would we necessarily use the $7 million set aside, or would we use that for other stuff?
It has to be related to the project, yes.
The short answer to your question is no.
To the point, thank
That's
you,
Ms. Carr.
Okay, so to follow up on that and then a few other questions that I have. So we are going to, although we already have sequestered $7 million, we're going to ask for another $7+ million, so $14, $15 million in a general obligation bond, or that failing in a COP. So we know, we were told, and I questioned it, that the cost was going to be $12.5 million, not $15. You know, it's kind of like, well, you're asking people for extra money just in case? Is that what we're doing?
Because we have to take part of the $7 million to pay for the rent. We did not budget it.
Wait a minute. Is that actually a part of the new building?
Is that, yes.
Okay, well, that's what he asked. If we're paying for the rent and we're paying it out of our general fund, why are we rolling it into the general obligation bonds or the COP? In other words, it's kind of like we're double charging it. Either we're going to pay for it one way or we're going to pay for it another way.
Right. If general obligation bonds pass, we do not need the money from this $7 million. I believe that
okay.
was the plan.
All right.
I'm confused. Which
clear as mud.
General obligation bonds pass. Your $7 million will be... stay in the fund reserve, correct?
No. I asked, that's what I was asking.
Maybe we need
but
to
But I'm assuming, Mr. Walker, do you want to respond to that?
I didn't hear the last one. What was the last one?
If we asked for $14 million in a bond issue, would we be able to just use that for the new police facility, however much we needed? We wouldn't have to get all the bonds at once, correct?
Right. That's correct. Then you wouldn't use what you've already allocated. But, I mean, council's going to have to decide what the amount is going to be that you ask for.
And this says she made the amortization schedules for 7.7, but could she also have done it for 5.5? Or did 7.7, was that an amount that you chose, Ms., that you're recommending?
Because 7.7 plus 7, right? And then with that amount, we have to take 1.2 for the rental from that same amount. From that same amount. Because it's come out of the fund reserve. Right now, if you look at the fund reserve, you know, on page M3.
I understand exactly what you're saying, but I don't think that what we're saying is that we're going to pay for it this year. And this year is essentially now, and we don't even know if we're going to have a bond issue yet.
Correct.
Okay, so, but you've got it tucked in a couple of places, maybe just in case, maybe not. I think that's...
Right.
Yeah,
well,
okay.
That's what my confusion was.
Yes.
And again, not to jump the gun, but again, from the very beginning when I first heard about the bond issue and heard about the funding for the police station, it was said that part of that bond issue was for the new police station, meaning 2.2 or something. And so all I'm trying to do is get clarification of whether we're, okay, now we have a deficit that we've gotten all of a sudden at on the date, June 13th, when this came out, and it's saying police station, but I already thought that we were including that in the bond issue. And so that's all I'm trying to do is get clarification. If we're including it in the bond issue, and now we're also paying it out of reserve from the deficit, that's having it, you know, charged twice.
Well, as Councilmember Carr said, this has to be start right away.
Okay.
So we do not know the result of the bond issues yet. Therefore, the money has to come out of the fund reserve as, you know, immediately, correct? Then if the bond passed, this money will not be used. It's going to maintain it all.
So then
left
that,
it in
that
our
difference,
fund reserve.
Right,
yeah.
That difference then becomes what? What happens to that difference? That 2.2 or 2.3 million, what happens? Because, again, we've already got 7 set aside, and
right.
We're going to...
If for certificates of participation, and we ask for 7.7,
right.
So the total will be 14.7,
right.
And we need about 2.5, you know, for the rental. If we take the money out of there, we do not need the fund reserve, correct?
Okay.
It's the same fund reserve.
So really, the new building costs us $14 or $15 million, not the 12.5, if we take into account that we had to move people out, just as we would have taken that into account if we were going to renovate the annex. So same thing.
Mr. Walker?
Just have to excuse my voice. I've got something going on here. What has changed the equation over the past few months is the temporary facility out there.
Mm-hmm.
That what has changed the equation. The numbers haven't changed in terms of the estimate for the new police facility.
Well,
nor,
now we have
nor,
to...
Nor for the cost of there being some kind of temporary relocation during that interim period. What has changed has been the need for the temporary facility.
Okay, but that I believe that was rolled into the cost of renovating the annex and not included in the cost of building new. But now it is clearly a cost associated with building new because we were given a court order. It doesn't matter why, but because we now have a court order to remove our employees from the building. So for me, I guess I kind of understand.
Okay.
Mr. Glicker?
Oh, sorry. Actually, I'd like to continue. I hadn't finished. So there was some question about whether we had budget study sessions. And please pass this around. This is a list of all the budget study sessions since 2002, and it's fairly extensive. This is the first year, as I said, we have not had a budget study session. For whatever the reason, I do have all of those emails available for anyone that would like to take a look at them.
As far as reserves go, I believe that in 2012, my wrist was slapped because I dared to ask for reserves to be used at the tune of, I think, $700,000 or $800,000 so that we could fix our streets. And I have that newsletter, too, and so I will give it from the mayor at the time in 2012, and I will provide that as well. Now, I actually do have... some things I have a question and possibly a correction to the agenda packet on page M3-3, all funds summary of reviews and expenditures. So if you'll turn to that page, and Mr. Walker, I believe, your director of finance may be able to answer these. So under both revenues and expenditures, I do not find a listing for fleet maintenance. So I believe it's missing.
No, ma'am. For fleet is considered internal service, so we don't consider it as either revenue or expenditure.
Okay, but yeah. in the book, in the budget book, on page 35, I believe, we do list it.
Right, right.
And so why is that?
It's just a accounting, formality that since revenue and expenditures has been allocated to all departments in general fund, so we don't consider internal service either revenue or expenditures as outside source of revenue. Okay. Because the revenue come from the rental from each department who use the equipment. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I understand that. So then in the next budget book, we probably may not want to include fleet. Is that correct? Because I'm looking at the budget book that you gave yeah. us, and I should be able to follow from here to the packet.
There's government, the total governmental funds, which is fleet or internal service, considered as governmental fund. However, for the citywide, it's not the outside revenue. Yeah.
Well,
and I think the budget has been in this format.
Okay, so I'm not sure why we have it in this format, in this book that goes out to the public and to the council, and then here we remove it. But that's okay. I think you've explained it. And then on the same page, on page 35 of the proposed budget book, under solid waste, we list the revenues as $2,770,000, but listed in the packet as $3,488,000. At the same time, on the same pages, expenditures are listed in the budget book as $3,121,000, but they're listed again in the packet as $3,488,000. So which numbers are correct and why? Page 35. Yeah. Under solid waste, what I said is, and if you compare that to M3-3, under solid waste, we show a revenue of $3,488,000. But when you look in the budget book that was prepared earlier, we show a revenue of $2,770,000.
Because we have made some adjustment to the final budget from the proposed budget.
I didn't necessarily see anything in that added up to that, although I looked at the increase in fees and some of the other things.
Correct.
It didn't add up to the differences, so I'm a little bit confused. And also, the revenues and the expenditures appear to be the same in this page, but in the budget, there's actually a surplus.
Shouldn't be a surplus.
I'm sorry.
It's a deficit.
Okay,
yes, ma'am.
A deficit.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. If I add in the whatever it was, $348,000 plus the associated $90,000, so that's $438,000 added to the $2,770. That doesn't come out to $3,488,000.
Another adjustment is the pension that's allocated to all funds as well. That would change the number from proposed budget to the final.
Okay, and so is pension figured into each one of these? And because many of these numbers are the same as these numbers here, so why would we have revised this?
The general fund is changed because it's allocated by department. So general fund itself should change as well.
I thought we kept our pension funds separate from our general funds. Am I mistaken?
Because the city contribution will come out of general fund. Yeah.
Okay. And so I just want to make sure with regard to the budget itself, this budget was prepared and submitted to the council in February of 2016, and the charter says by no later than May 1st, so we met our obligation. Is that correct? Okay. And so then the budget hearing was held on May 23rd, 2016, and there was an advertisement and a notice provided in the May 23rd, 2016 City Council agenda, but not necessarily any other way. So that's standard?
Acceptable.
Okay. So we have met that. And then Rule 35 says that the council may modify or amend the budget after the hearing. And we'll discuss that. I will discuss that during the budget discussions.
Mr. Crow?
Yes, I just have a couple of, actually one quick question. When I look at the capital improvement program, we've really only allocated $300,000 for street resurfacing. And is that something that's based on staff or who came up with this number?
Director of Public Works has the project that's submitted.
And so some of the other items that are listed in the capital improvement budget took precedence over our streets, I'm presuming, by staff.
Yes, sir. In addition, capital improvement sales tax fund right now showed a surplus, approximately $300,000. And Director of Public Works planned to use it for upcoming project that wasn't expected at the time of budgeting.
Just to clarify to Councilmember Crow that the $300,000 that the finance director is referring to will be used for street projects. It's just that the Public Works Director hasn't identified specific ones for that amount.
Okay, but just to my colleagues, that seems like a pretty small number for the 81 miles of streets that we have versus some of the other priorities that this budget contains that don't seem to rise to the level of putting money into our infrastructure. So I'm sure I'll continue my questions and dialogue as we go into open session.
Any other comments?
Just one.
Okay, Mr. Crow.
Not about the budget, but due to the medicine I'm on, I will need to be taking pretty regular breaks, and so all I would ask is that please discussions continue, but please no votes while I'm out of the room and coming back up. Thank you.
Okay, and I would point out that capital improvement sales taxes, we're doing 1,197,000 in capital improvements from capital improvement sales tax, another 675 from parks. And we also got some more grants. Any other questions? Hearing none, everyone. Thanks. We will reconvene up there in about 8 minutes.